Hey everyone, welcome to the brand new episode of Astrophysicast podcast. I am Krishna Bulchandani.
And I am Aman Mohan.
So this is the, I guess, seventh episode of the season where we talked about stars and characteristics. And today we'll be talking about binary stars and gravitational waves. So Aman, why don't you start by telling us a bit about binary stars?
Yeah, sure. So binary stars are nothing but two stars orbiting a common center of mass. And the brighter star is officially classified as a primary star, while the dimmer of the two is the secondary star. And it's classified as A and B respectively.
And in the cases where the stars are of equal brightness, the designation given by the discoverers is usually respected.
Yeah, and you know, binary pairs can be classified based on their orbit. There are white binaries, which are stars that have orbits that keep them spread apart from one another. And these stars evolve separately with very little impact from their companions. And they may have once contained a third star which booted the distant companion outward while eventually having been ejected themselves.
So, and in the case of close binary, they evolve never by able to transfer their mass from one to the other. The primaries of some close binary consume the material from their companion, sometimes exerting a gravitational force strong enough to pull the smaller star in completely.
And these pairs can also be classified based on how they are observed. A system that is overlapping categories.
Yeah, so the first class is the visual binaries. And these are the two stars with a wide enough separation that both can be viewed through a telescope or even with the pair of binoculars. So 5 to 10% of visible stars are usually with the visual binaries.
Wow. And then there is the spectroscopic binary, which appears close even when viewed through a telescope. And scientists must measure the wavelength of this light the stars emit and determine their binary nature based on the features of those measurements.
Yeah, and the other class include the eclipsing binaries. And these are the stars whose orbits are at an angle so that from Earth, one passes in front of other causing an eclipse. So, and this feature is based on the line of sight rather than any particular feature of the pair of stars. So yeah, which was the first binary star discovered?
Yeah, the first binary star seen were visual binaries. It was in 1617 at the request of a fellow scientist, Galileo Galilei turned his telescope towards the second star from the end of the handle of the Big Dipper. Discovering that one star seemed to be two, ultimately turned out to be six stars.
You must be wondering who termed this name binary. So in 1802, Sir William Herschel, who catalogued about 700 pairs of stars, first used the term binary in reference to these double stars.
Yeah, you know, some such stars travel around the galaxy, and sometimes a massive star catches a passing one, which creates an entirely new binary pair.
Oh, but this is a rare event. More commonly, the envelope of gas and a dust that collapse into itself to form a star splits and form two or more stars instead. These stars evolve together, though not necessarily identically.
Oh, okay. And how a pair of stars evolve depends on their distance from each other, right? And white binaries have very little effect on each other, and so they often evolve much like single stars.
Oh, that's amazing. So in close binary, however, they impact each other's evolution with mass transfer changing the composition of stars. Say if one star in a close binary system explodes in a supernova or sheds its outer layer and forms a pulsar, often the companion is destroyed. And even if it survives, it continues to orbit the newly formed body, perhaps passing on more of its materials maybe.
Oh. And you know, binary star system provides the best means for scientists to determine the mass of a star. As the pair pulls on each other, the astronomers can calculate the size and from there determine characteristics such as temperature and radius, etc. And these factors help characterize single main sequence stars in the universe.
Wow, that's useful. Usually, yep. Star in a multiple system can have a direct impact on life, right? A host of planets have already been found orbiting multiple stars. The orbit of these stars can affect the evolution of life, which needs a relatively stable system to develop in.
Yeah, but though binary and multiple systems appear initially daunting, given that one or more stars are constantly moving closer and farther from the planets and changing the amount of light, heat and radiation they receive, systems such as wide binaries or closed binaries could actually produce conditions where life could eventually evolve.
Wow. Well, binary systems certainly have a habitable zone where liquid water could potentially exist on the surface of planet. Life might find it difficult to gain a foothold there.
Yeah. Although orbiting two stars at once, as Kepler-47c does, makes life very elliptical, occasionally bringing the planet out of the zone. And you know, life doesn't take too kindly to frequently freezing over.
Yeah. So orbiting just one star in binary system, well, what happens then? Well, sometimes you'll have two stars in your sky at once, which can be a tad toasty. And sometimes you'll have a star on each face of the planet, ruining the night. And don't forget the double doses of UV radiation and solar flares. With that kind of instability, erraticism and irradiation, it's hard enough to imagine a complex life evolving with the kind of regularity it needs.
The closest star system to Earth that actually includes a binary pair of stars, Alpha Centauri A and Alpha Centauri B. And the third star, Proxima Centauri, is roughly one-fifth of a light year away.
While no star in the habitable zone have been found in the binary star part of the Alpha Centauri, the Proxima Centauri B was announced in 2016 in the habitable region of its star.
However, scientists are divided as to whether a red dwarf star such as Proxima Centauri has stable enough space weather to prevent radiation or heat surges, you know, that diminishes the chances for life on a nearby planet. So, Krishna, what do you think? Is our sun a binary star?
That's a pretty difficult topic, as it has been discussed very much since the decades. So in the 1980s, scientists suggested that the presence of Nemesis, a second star, either a brown dwarf, dim red dwarf or a white dwarf in the sun system, as a reason behind the periodic mass extinction that occurred in Earth history, which some paleontologists suggest have occurred in 26 million year cycles, though the cyclic nature is still under the debate.
And in 2010, NASA's White Field Infrared Survey Explorer, or the WISE, began searching for brown dwarfs, though it isn't searching especially for one in the solar system. But if a companion exists, WISE should turn it up.
Yeah, in one of the interviews, NASA's astrobiologist David Morrison said that such object would have been clearly detected by this sensitive telescope, right?
Yeah, and in 2017, a study showed that almost every star like the Sun likely had a companion when they were born.
And in one of the surveys, using very large array in New Mexico and other, the James Clerk Maxwell Telescope in Hawaii examined the dozens of systems and found that the younger one generally had wide separation and the older one had a narrow separation.
You know, the modeling suggested that most stars would form with a distance between them, and then they either move closer together or drift apart, breaking gravitational bonds. In the case of the Sun, it's still unclear if Nemesis did exist, and if it had, the Sun's sibling likely moved away billions of years ago.
Some of the scientists still suggest that there is evidence out there for a Nemesis. Evidence they cite includes the distant orbit of a dwarf planet, Sedna, the well-defined edge of a Kuiper belt, and orbit of object in the Oort cloud.
Yeah. And separately, there are research teams pursuing the track of a purported Planet 9 ice giant planet that is at the edge of our solar system. And in 2016, Constantine Berrigan and Mike Brown stated that Planet 9 may be altering the orbits of the objects in the Kuiper belt. So now let's talk about a slightly different but related topic, which is gravitational wave. And you all must be familiar with Einstein's general theory of relativity, right? And which says that our universe is a fabric worn by space and time. A space-time fabric, to be precise. So according to this theory, massive objects like Earth distort the space-time around it.
Okay, so let's imagine a bowling ball kept in the center of a trampoline. As you can guess, the heavier the mass, the more it will bend the trampoline. The larger the object, the more that the space-time is distorted by the object. This is pretty much how celestial body lie in the space-time fabric. If a marble were circling around the bowling ball on the dimpled trampoline, the marble would fall inward toward the bowling ball like a rock in a space circling a planet.
Yeah, that's a great example to familiarize with the concept of space-time fabric. And another example is, if you drag your hand through a still pool of water, you'll notice that waves follow in its path, right? and spread outward through the pole, causing ripples. And according to Albert Einstein, the same thing happens when heavy objects move through space-time and causing ripples in space-time. And these gravitational waves are actually ripples in space-time that travel outward from a source.
Oh. And you know, actually scientists think that powerful gravitational waves are created when two extremely dense objects like two neutron stars or two black hole or a black hole and a neutron star orbit one another in a binary pairs like we mentioned previously. The interaction of these two objects swirls space-time, creating a ripples that theoretically can be measured using the powerful instrumentation.
Yeah, and the audience should make sure that you shouldn't confuse with gravitational waves and gravity waves. Both are different. Gravitational waves are different from gravity waves, such that gravity waves are actually ripples created in the atmospheres of planets by the interactions of winds whipping over geological phases on the planet's surface.
Yeah, and in fact, in 2016, the Advanced LIGO, which is a laser interferometer gravitational wave observatory, announced the first ever direct detection of gravitational waves. The discovery was met with excitement by both general public as well as the scientific community as well.
And the LIGO team announced the detection of a second gravitational wave signal in June 2016. And the pair of instruments had actually detected the signal on December 26, 2015. And the observatory announced the third detection, which was in 2017 June, and the fourth detection later in September 2017. And the first four gravitational wave signals detected by the LIGO were all created by pairs of colliding black holes.
Wow. The fourth detection was actually significant because it was also detected by the Virgo gravitational wave detector in Italy. Virgo is the collaboration between National Center for Scientific Research in France and Italy's National Institute for Nuclear Physics.
Yeah, you know, white dwarf binaries have branches in the order of the Sun and the diameters in the order of the Earth, and they cannot get much closer together than 10,000 kilometers before they will merge and explode in a supernova, which would also end the emission of a gravitational wave. And until then, their gravitational radiation would be comparable to that of a neutron bomb. And the supernova explosions are also a great source for gravitational waves.
Yeah. LIGO aims to detect these changes using an instrument called interferometer. So usually this device split a single laser beam into two and send both of the beams shooting off perpendicular to each other. If the beam travel equal distances, bounces off mirrors and come back, the wave that make them up should still be in alignment when they return. But a passing gravitational wave can actually change the distance of each arm, which would change the distance that each beam travels relative to its sibling. So when the beam returned to their source, scientists would be able to detect this change.
Wow, that's amazing how it works. You know, however, gravitational waves change the length of the interferometer's arms by an incredibly tiny amount, roughly 1 by 10,000th the width of an atom's nucleus. To pick up such a tiny change, LIGO must filter out all other sources of noise, like, you know, earthquakes, traffic, etc.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, gravitational waves could help physicists understand the fundamental laws of the universe. They are in fact a crucial part of Einstein's general theory of relativity. Finding them would prove that theory and also could help us figure out where it goes astray.
Yeah, and hopefully it could lead to a more accurate, more all-encompassing model and perhaps one day point the way toward a theory of everything.
Yeah. So guys, thanks for listening to the Astrophysicast with your hosts Krishna Bulchandani and Aman Mohan. We hope you enjoyed our deep dive into binary stars and gravitational waves. And to catch all the latest, you can follow our Instagram page as well. So that's it for this episode, guys. See you next time.